my talk. Here we go.
He said he living life as a gringo. Where you question where you fit and every time you mingle. They say you do this with not enough that.
My rapping is really bad. This life as a gringo.
Yes, welcome to another episode of Life as a Gringo. I am Dramos, of course. Now it is Thursday, which means we have our Thursday Trends episode. And fair warning, it is a bit of a shit show in the world right now. And politics are dominating the headlines, and rightfully so. So I just wanted to give a fair warning. This is incredibly important information for our community. So just a little warning as I cover the Thursday trends for this week. And helping me break it all down, my guest is a former congressional candidate for the great state of New Jersey, an activist, a progressive, and an anti-money laundering specialist. My guy, Hector Oseguera. How you doing, bro? It's good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Dramos, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. You know,
of course.
Interesting times.
Man, interesting times to say the least. And I wanted to get you on here because I always enjoy kind of just talking shop with you when it comes to politics and social justice issues that we're seeing. I mean, over the last couple of years, it's been a real pleasure to get to kind of have you to go to with that kind of stuff. So as you said, really interesting time. So I wanted to focus on kind of what's going on right now in the world of politics, because it's something that affects all of us, but especially when we're talking about people of color and kind of the progress we thought we were making and possibly it going backwards from where maybe we even were before a year ago. So I want to get into on today's show, some of the stuff we've been seeing with Biden and just Democrats overall kind of seemingly to drop the ball all around these first governor elections that we saw this last week with Virginia and New Jersey kind of being the test dummies for what we might see next year. Let's also just get into police reform as a whole, the whole George Floyd Policing Act, and we'll kind of tie all that together. Maybe we'll touch on abortion rights and what's going on with that. And we'll have some fun also with QAnon and what their latest, greatest conspiracy theory is. And we'll also, of course, do some positive stuff. We'll celebrate a movement that's happening in our community and also somebody who did something incredible in the world of sports for our community. We'll do all of that. But first, man, let's dive into some of these stories. We'll do a bit of a deep dive in a segment we call For the People in the Back.
Say it louder for the people in the back.
All right, so let's start on, I don't want to say it's a lighter note, but it's definitely a fucking ridiculous note. Let's talk about QAnon for a second here, okay?
No doubt.
I'm assuming you've seen the gathering that's happening in Dallas, where hundreds of QAnon supporters have gone to the site of JFK's murder and are expecting the return of John F. Kennedy Jr. And if that wasn't crazy enough, let's also break down what they think is going to happen when John F. Kennedy Jr. apparently rises from the dead. And they believe that he then somehow is going to reinstate former President Donald Trump. And then another popular opinion on the QAnon world is that Trump will then, after he's reinstated, step down so that John F. Kennedy Jr. can become president. And then former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn would be appointed as JFK's vice president, and Donald Trump would become the King of Kings.
That's my favorite part.
Right.
That's my favorite part.
The King of Kings. Bro, but like, all right, so it's easy for us to laugh about this, right? The problem is, though, a lot of the opinions on the right that we're seeing when we see like these YouTube experts, Facebook, TikTok, all of the above, they're kind of getting their cues from QAnon. You know what I mean? Like they're kind of maybe not taking on some of the craziest stories, but all of their theories and ideas are wrapped in like what is being discussed in the world of QAnon when it comes to, you know, the way that politics are working, you know, the fix, all these different things, right? And then what gets even scarier is that now I feel like they kind of use the January 6th insurrection as like, it was kind of like, I'm a big true crime fan. I'm not sure if you fuck with true crime like that.
A lot.
All right. So, you know, when they talk about serial killers, like their first murder was kind of like them fumbling and bumbling through it, right? And then like over time, they perfected their craft as far as like getting away with it and how they wanted to do things. it almost feels like Jan 6 was that for like the extremists, where like that was their fumbling and bumbling. And now they're getting a bit smarter and they're beginning to try and infiltrate the government, which is the scary part. So you have these crazy people running for office, some of which getting elected. I mean, look at somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene. You know, and then also Facebook not putting a stop to their nonsense. They're now becoming these gigantic influencers over social media and continue to spread this stuff. I mean, shit, as somebody who ran for office, I mean, all that you're seeing, I mean, what is kind of your breakdown of everything you've been seeing and your feelings behind it, man?
Yeah, right. And starting with the QAnon stuff, it's easy to laugh at. It's easy to poke fun at stuff like that. Right. But what you have to recognize is that these are actual literal human beings.
Right.
And what they want is that they want something to believe in.
Sure.
And they want something to believe in so bad that they'll literally buy whatever is being sold to them.
Yeah.
And when you sell to people, you know, the government's lying to you. Mm-hmm. That's true. The media's lying to you. That's true.
Right.
And then you keep taking it down and down these trails. You have people who form what I see politically. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's these evangelicals that they're always waiting for the end of the world.
Right.
You know, the end of the world
right.
is going to come.
Right.
You better get right now
yeah.
because the end of the world's coming next week.
Yep.
This is the same thing politically. Mm. And they're basically expecting something that's never going to happen, but keeping them on that string
yeah.
keeps them a follower.
Right.
And they're always going to be looking for a solution. So, you know, what is the answer for us is that we have to sell them something to believe in. We're going to touch upon this, I know, but looking at all the elections,
yeah.
what you start to see is that for the Democrats, saying, I'm not Donald Trump, that's not good enough.
Yes.
You can't sell people on the other guy sucks.
Right.
That's what I learned running for office.
Yeah,
your opponent could be the worst person in the universe.
Sure.
The next question is going to be, okay, how are you different? Why should I care about you?
Yeah.
And if you're just saying, well, I'm just that guy a little bit less,
right,
which is a lot of what the Democrats are offering, you know, we're moderates, we're centrists, we're basically Republican light, that breeds a vacuum for QAnon type conspiracies to take hold of people and to lead them down this trail, because it's very easy to say, well, look, you don't like the Republicans. The Democrats are just them a little bit less.
Right.
You know, I got something totally different to sell you.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an analogy I make a lot. But if you think about the 2016 election, if your entire life you were given the choice between Pepsi and Coca-Cola, that's all you could choose, Pepsi and Coca-Cola.
Right.
If somebody says, I have orange soda.
Yeah.
A lot of people are going to be for it
because
even if they don't even like it, they're just going to say, well, let me get something new this time.
Right.
And that's what we see happening. And that's why I think people should take this stuff seriously with the QAnon stuff, because at the end of the day, these are people looking for something to believe in. They're just being given this crazy idea. I don't think, from my perspective, it shouldn't be that hard to give them a more optimistic opinion to believe in, not this JFK Jr. is going to come back from the dead and make Donald Trump Jesus Christ.
Right.
You know, like, that's pretty simple to combat if you actually try.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think you're touching on a lot of incredible points, and I want to get to all of them. And one thing I do want to point out is these are similar tactics that Hitler ran on. Basically, he sold people on, hey, the face of everything wrong with your life are these people, are unfortunately the Jewish people is who he decided to select. And essentially, that's very much so the tactics that we're seeing. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of this stuff has historical references. I mean, a lot of these guys read these books of how dictators, you know, ran their countries and studied these different tactics and things like that. It's very much actually like how cult leaders get people to follow in and buy into what they're selling. You get people who feel so unrepresented, who are so disenfranchised, and then you now sell them on this dream that you have the secret sauce to fix all their problems, you know?
Right. And you just said how January 6th dovetails into this a lot and how that might have been just like the trial run.
Right.
If you look at the history of coups and attempts to overthrow governments, the first one doesn't usually work.
Right.
With Hitler, it didn't work the first time. They put him in jail.
Right.
And then he came out and got to try a second time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep, you know, people say history repeats itself. I don't think history repeats itself, but it rhymes.
Mm.
And you have to see the lessons from before to understand what's going on right now. So, yeah, I think all of these things kind of like tie in together. And if you are not paying attention to what's happening in the culture, meaning this sort of QAnon stuff, you're not going to be ready for the political version that comes out later because politics is downstream from culture. So this cultural stuff that you're seeing happening with the QAnon stuff is going to affect politics, but down the line, and people are going to go asleep to it like they did during Obama that gave us Trump.
Right. And also, I mean, even just the idea of misinformation, look at our community. We are like the easy praying targets. And it was proven with Trump and like and all these different conspiracy theories you're seeing. I mean, WhatsApp becoming a hub for, you know, misinformation because they know that our community uses it as a means to communicate with one another so heavily. I mean, that's kind of to me the scary part is you have people who don't speak English as a first language, you know what I mean, are really putting all of their trust in whatever media they're seeing and the commercials that are played throughout it and whatever, you know, nonsense pops up on social media. And that's what also scares me when it comes to our future as Latinos in this country as well.
Yeah. And honestly, like, that's a real big problem because, like, I'm just speaking from the Dominican community. I'm sure you could speak for the Puerto Rican community. Yeah. Like, that sort of misinformation, word of mouth stuff spreads like wildfire.
Yeah.
And again, you're looking at a community that's poor, that's disenfranchised, mm-hmm. that is a little bit more religious. So they might be a little bit more prone to, superstition mm-hmm. and stuff like that. It's easy for these, like, little cultural things to catch on. I know a lot of people that were regular Democratic voters, mm-hmm. you know, are dark-skinned Latinos.
Yeah.
They're kind of messing with all that, you know, vaccine hesitancy and all this sort of stuff because it breeds in an ecosystem mm-hmm. where it gets to be reinforced and people don't have a better outlet to tell them, like, hey, you know, actually this stuff is like BS and this is not true. And we got to be better at that. We got to be better at policing our own community and say, hey, you know, you guys are talking about this stuff, but like, this is literally not true.
Right.
And, you know, we have, that is a very difficult and uncomfortable conversation. Cause I know that in our community, superstition and stories mm-hmm. spread like wildfire and it's the next thing. And now everybody's talking about it. And it's a very difficult thing to combat.
Yeah. And listen, rightfully so, paranoia, because I mean, you look at the treatment of our people by this government. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I'm speaking from the Puerto Rican perspective, you know, how 1/3 of our population was sterilized at one point, you know, by the U.S. government. You know, you're talking about bombing on our island, using our island as a testing ground for bombing. And now that, you know, Vieques becoming the hub for cancer in Puerto Rico, you know, and the government not taking any sort of responsibility for that connection. So obviously, I understand the mistrust, but you're absolutely right. I mean, we have to educate each other and understand the logic of it all. And what really frustrates me is, and to me, people like Tucker Carlson on Fox News should be brought up on some sort of charges because you have somebody whose company made it a mandate that they're all vaccinated. And so they're recognizing that the science is very real. But then he goes on television and spreads all kinds of lies and misinformation and scares people into not wanting to get the vaccine when he himself is the poster child for getting the vaccine and it working. You know what I mean? And that, absolutely. Like, you know, who's holding them responsible? But to me, that's also incredibly frustrating when it comes to the media, you know?
Yeah, the media issue is a big one because, you know, you have freedom of speech, so you could technically say whatever you want, right? You could lie to your audience all day and night, and if they want to believe it, you could say it's on them.
Right.
In this country, we used to have what was called the fairness doctrine, which meant that if you put one side on your screen, you have to give the other side an opportunity to speak as well.
Right.
So that people can get both sides and they make their own decision. I think that that's a much better idea, right? Because if you put both sides up against each other, I trust that people on a general basis will be intelligent enough to make their own decisions.
Sure.
But if you're only pumping them full of one side and that's all they see 24/7, every single day, that's all they're being fed, it's easy to steer them down that direction.
Right.
And so there are ways to ensure that the discourse is more balanced. And it has to be from a source that people trust. Because if you have a cable station like Fox and you have a cable station like MSNBC, Republicans go to one, Democrats go to the other, and they say the other one's lying to you and the other one's lying to you, right? So and no, nothing gets solved. If you had to put these opinions up against one another and submit them to scrutiny, I think that we will have a much better discourse. But unfortunately, in this era of social media, it's like the more inflammatory stuff is what gets more clicks.
Yep.
And so the media has an incentive to keep it more inflammatory and less fact-based. So fact-based stuff is out there, but it don't get any clicks.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to read that stuff.
You have to dig for it. And that's what's scary is you have to dig for the fucking facts, man. That's what makes it.
Right.
And that's what is interesting to me is like, regardless of the aisle that you fall on, I think we all can agree, the media is fucking up and a lot of what we're being given is not real facts or it's loose facts or it's kind of like information that's missing other information that would actually give you a bit more of the full perspective. So like when they say fake news, I get it to a degree, right? Like I understand that. But that also doesn't mean go to some random person on TikTok and then take them. That's where the disconnect lies, where it's like, I understand your distrust with the media, But that doesn't mean put all your eggs into the basket of some random person on social media who has no real credentials. You know what I mean? Aside from telling you that Absolutely. They have credentials.
And that's what we have to fight, right? Is mm-hmm. that if you're not trusting, you know, the media, who are you turning to?
Right.
And that's where we got to really watch it, because, yeah, now we have all these, like, you know, QAnon, mm-hmm. TikTokers, YouTubers, all these people who literally don't know anything and they're just putting words on a screen.
Right.
And now people are believing that, and they'll share that as information. And then other people share that as information. And you have like a very bad incentive. Mm-hmm. And of course, the social media companies want to share it more and more and more.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, Facebook, that was their bread and butter. You know what I mean? The more they can get you arguing in the comments, the better for them. And we saw that, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, let's kind of. Exactly. More ads and revenue for them. I mean, I want to touch on the gubernatorial race that you mentioned that.
Yes.
First, though, let's touch on Biden for a second, though, because I kind of feel like he sets the stage for all that we saw.
100%.
You know, this week when it comes to these races. But let's take we'll get into that. We'll take a quick break, though, and then we'll be right back. All right, so we're back, and I mean, I think to me, his Build Back Better plan and kind of how it's become this watered down version of what it once was, his inability to now even get that watered down version to quickly pass through is still, it's showcasing this dude is just not doing what we need him to do. And it really, I think, has, you know, made people's faith in Democrats as a whole go downhill. But let's just talk about how you see Biden, who I'm assuming you voted for in this last election. I mean, how would you kind of grade all that you're seeing?
Yeah, I would give him a sharp F minus, honestly, a sharp F minus, because the president does set the tone from the top. Mm-hmm. And what happened in New Jersey and what happened in Virginia is 100% a representation of what's going on with Biden. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know, but your viewers might not know, I was heavily involved in the Jersey City elections, right? A lot of my friends were running in elections and I was helping them. So I was doing text banking. Mm-hmm. I sent a lot of texts. I sent probably 20,000 texts. Half the people who respond are talking to me about Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Mm. And I'm telling them, I'm asking you about Jersey City elections. Right. I'm not even talking about the gubernatorial election.
Yeah.
Forget the presidential election.
Right.
But it shows you that that's what's on people's minds.
Sure.
And the president will set the tone from the top.
Mm-hmm.
How's it been? It's been an absolute failure, right? He is not able to get through his signature piece.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a student of history, you know that when Obama got into office, he had 2 years to pass one major thing. It was Obamacare.
Right.
And that was it. After that, he got blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So this is supposed to be the one thing that Biden gets before the next elections come and he loses his majority and he can't get anything.
While we have the House and the Senate, I want to add.
Right.
Also, which it's supposed to have been like easy peasy. Let's get it all done. Right.
Right. And so so this is what happens when Republicans get into power. They play to their base,
mm-hmm.
the people who voted for them.
Yeah.
When Democrats get into power, they try to play to people who will never vote for them,
which
is these moderate type of Republicans that they say, oh, well, if we just water it down enough,
mm-hmm.
those Republicans will come to our side.
Yeah.
And it never happens.
Right.
It didn't happen to Obama.
Mm-hmm.
It never happens. And so the lesson I think that the Democrats should learn, double down on the people who voted for you.
Right.
Who got Joe Biden across the finish line in the primaries,
mm-hmm.
black voters, black women voters.
Yes.
Where is Joe Biden's agenda for black women?
Right. Right.
What political party wins and then ignores the people who put them into office?
Right. Well, it shows you that like racism is so far ingrained in everything, because obviously, the Republicans have no problem hiding some of the blatant kind of racial tactics that they use. The Democrats will placate to you and pretend. You know what I mean? I talk about they're like a dude who's just trying to smash. You know what I'm saying? They're telling you everything.
Yeah. Oh,
you know
man.
What I'm saying? Like, they're telling you everything you want to hear. They're buttering you up. And then once they get what they want, it's like, oh, sorry, I'm too busy to hang out. You know what I'm saying? They ghost you. And that to me, it's like it's incredibly frustrating from an obvious standpoint of like, you know, what the fuck, we're placing all of our sort of, you know, our eggs in your basket. But B, we have no other choice at this point. You know what I'm saying? Because there is no third party candidate that could legitimately actually, you know, take down some of these bigger positions of governor or to the Senate or, you know, or presidency, you know. So it's a very frustrating kind of thing. And I don't even know what the answer is, to be perfectly honest with you. I wish I did.
Well, honestly, I'll give you the answer. Mm. And it's that the Democrats should double down on the people who vote for them.
Yeah.
If Joe Biden came into office and he canceled student loan debt,
mm-hmm.
if he came into office and said that he was going to pass health care for everybody,
sure.
If he came into office and just, you know, again, the Republicans get into power and they never have an excuse that, oh, we couldn't get it done. Right. Sorry, guys.
Right.
Why is it every time the Democrats get into power, it's always this, oh, man, you know, we wish we could have helped you, but, right. you know, the Republicans stopped us this time. If we got minimum wage to $15 an hour, if we got health care, we got climate change. These are things Joe Biden could do with a pen.
Yeah.
But he's afraid that those moderates are going to say, oh, man, he went too far to the left and now we can't support him. The Democrats have to stop being afraid of being portrayed as going too far to the left, because what they're really trying to say is, oh, well, now they're really placating to their base.
Sure.
Right. Which, again, like you said, it's racism is so ingrained. When the Republicans do it, oh, man, that's their base. They got to placate them.
Right, right.
When the Democrats do it is, oh, why are they being so divisive? Mm-hmm. How come they're not? I thought you're supposed to be the president for everybody. Right.
Right?
That's what they said to Obama.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't do things for black people. You got to be everybody's president. Right. How come that only applies to Democrats, never to Republicans?
Sure. No, that's a great point. I mean, Republicans can be as shameless as they want. Like Trump had no problem forcing his way and forcing his will. You know, and he didn't, you know, give a shit about the bad press that he was getting. And,
no excuses, right. nothing.
And for better or worse, that's why his base was so loyal to him. You know what I'm saying? Like,
absolutely.
To the point that even after he completely dropped the ball on his response to COVID, he still had a shot at winning this last election. You know what I'm saying?
It was, he almost won.
Exactly. That's what's so crazy about it. And people like Joe Biden don't seem to realize that. And it's sad because I think, you know, Joe Biden would be an okay president for normal times. If we were living in normal times where there wasn't so many crises, you know, on the horizon, he'd be okay. But we need somebody who's radical. We need somebody who's unafraid to take the punishment, take the bad press, and just get shit done for the people that are putting them in office.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I 100% agree. It's all about the perspective that you take when you're in power. You know, who are you catering to?
Right.
If you're catering to your base, the people who put you in power, I think that those people will be comfortable giving you power again. If you're not, you know, why are those people going to vote for you next time around? If I put you in office and then you blow me off, it's like that dude who's just trying to smash. Or is the person going to let them back in a second time?
Right.
Probably not.
Right.
So
right.
Why would you behave that way?
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. And then let's get into the governor's race that we saw, because a lot of what we saw, it's a trickle down effect, like you said, from the top, you know,
absolutely.
And the fact that he has not been able to energize Democrats or people to vote Democrat. I mean, he was out there. He was in Virginia campaigning, saying all the right things. But at the end of the day, you know, Virginia, which was a state that voted for Joe Biden in 2020, they ended up going, red. You know, Glenn Youngkin won Virginia. New Jersey at the time of recording is too close to call, but it shouldn't even be this close. It's
at all.
It's scary that it's this fucking close. And actually, when you're seeing that counties in New Jersey that Joe Biden won are actually now flipping red, which is incredibly scary. So, I mean, you know, go ahead and give me kind of your knee jerk reaction to what you've seen over this last day.
Yeah. And I think that it sort of just dovetails great off the conversation that we just had, because I would say put those two gubernatorial candidates up against one another. Right. You have Phil Murphy in New Jersey and you have Terry McAuliffe in Virginia. Both are supposed to be reliable blue states.
Sure.
Yes, they can elect a Republican governor. We just had Chris Christie.
Yep.
But at the presidential level, they tend to go blue very repeatedly. Right. Phil Murphy, not as progressive as I would like, but campaigned with Bernie Sanders, gave IDs to undocumented individuals, a millionaire's tax. You could put him more in the progressive sphere.
Sure.
He's just squeaking by.
Yeah.
Just squeaking by. Look at Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, runs as an unabashed moderate. I'm in the middle of the road.
Right.
Guy gets blown out.
Yeah.
He's getting blown out. And he was supposed to be the favorite.
Yeah.
So it's not just that he lost in a 50-50. People expected him to be the favorite.
Yeah.
So where's that difference? Who is it that put Governor Murphy over the top, you know, assuming that he's going to just squeak by, which is what the projections are looking like? If he just squeaks by and Terry McAuliffe loses, who is it that voted? What are the type of people that voted for Governor Murphy but did not vote for Terry McAuliffe? It's those base voters, your bread and butter people, the black and brown voters in the city who are either energized to vote for somebody because he did something for them, or will not vote for you because you're just selling me your Republican light.
Yeah.
And so that's what our media is always against my side, the progressives. Mm-hmm. I'm watching the news. All they say, oh, man, did Joe Biden go too far left? Are the Democrats going too far left?
Right.
They never inspect the moderates and say maybe there's something wrong with trying to sell people Republican light.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't seem to work. Mm-hmm. Look at presidentials. Look at Hillary Clinton. Look at the people who are able to get support of the people, mm-hmm. and the people that people are like, oh, well, I guess they don't need me, so I'm not going to support them.
Right, right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's where the difference is. Those black and brown voters who, I would say, if you could put Virginia and New Jersey right next to each other, mm-hmm. there were people in New Jersey who said, you know, Governor Murphy might not be perfect in my eyes.
Yes.
But at least he's done enough policy-wise that I'm going to go out and vote for him.
Sure.
And who did not make that same calculation in Virginia.
Right.
And that's where I think the discourse should focus on, is like, how do you give people something to vote for and stop trying to say, well, I'm not Donald Trump, because clearly that's not going to work anymore.
Right, right. And it's funny you say, because they always go to, are Democrats becoming too progressive?
Yeah.
Where in what policy are they passing that is so progressive? You know what I mean? Like, I haven't seen anything with student loan debt, like you've mentioned, still there.
Right.
You know, we're still seeing a problem at the border where they're being told to stay in place. So where, you know, the George Floyd Policing Act, dead in the water,
right,
you know,
say
police reform, dead in the water, essentially. So where are these progressive things that apparently are killing and scaring away people from voting Democrat? They're non-existent.
They're non-existent. And it's that's like a shell that they put on the conversation that the progressives, we don't take the corporate money. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're really focused on.
Right.
Is that, and look at Terry McAuliffe. There's this capitalist group called the Carlyle Group, which is an evil villain, very evil to, like, easy to paint them as evil.
Sure.
And Glenn Youngkin is employed by the Carlyle Group. Mm. Now, how come Terry McAuliffe didn't use that against
him?
Because his wife is employed by the Carlyle Group, right? And so he needs that bread.
Sure.
And so what you need is to give an honest split from that corporate party that honestly doesn't get any individual human support. What they get is a lot of money from corporations, which can be used to buy support, right? If you give me $1 million, I can make it look like I'm the greatest person in the world. Mm-hmm. But are people going to really turn out on election day? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
If you give people an actual difference, that's what's going to make a difference.
Yeah, that's a great point. And actually, something I've always kind of wondered and you know, kind of gone through my head, and maybe you can speak to it more because you've actually ran for office, but what stops people like Bernie Sanders and AOC from, like, just breaking away and essentially starting their own third party? I mean, you know, that is based upon their own individual popularity that they have. They have bases that will go with them. They can be the ones to kind of set that fire. What stops them from doing that to help us kind of have this other third option?
That's a great question. And it's something that people ask a lot, right? I would say this, in a perfect world, America will probably have four parties, right? There will be a Bernie Sanders AOC party. Mm-hmm. There will be a regular Joe Biden Democrat party. Mm-hmm. There would be a regular Republican party. And then there would be the Trump party, right? That's how our politics really breaks down. But the way that our political system is set up is that the parties have a tremendous advantage over anybody else, right? Anybody else.
Yeah.
So imagine that you and me are going to play a game of basketball, right? Mm-hmm. But I tell you, the only way you could play is if you tie both your arms and both your legs together.
Right, right.
And that's what it is to run as a third party in America. Mm-hmm. You don't have the support. They get single digit percentages.
Sure.
And that's unfortunate, but that's kind of the way that we've set up this system. To me, the best way to do it is to have a third party type candidate run through one of the major parties. And that's what I think Donald Trump did, because Donald Trump was far off the Republican spectrum.
Right.
So he would kind of qualify as a third party type candidate.
Yeah.
But he recognized that he needed to get within a major party. And Bernie Sanders made the same calculation.
Right,
he's technically an independent.
Yeah.
Right. But he recognized that if I run as an independent, I won't get any media attention. I won't get any fundraising. I won't get anything that will lead to a victory. So you have to get those candidates to run through the major party system, because unfortunately that's the system that we have set up right now.
Yeah.
And if you try to run as a third party, that's like trying to play a game of basketball, but both your arms and both your legs are tied together. That's the type of chance that you have of winning.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, but the fucked up thing is that Bernie doing that should have actually been the presidential candidate. But the Democrats right. found a way to fuck him over, essentially.
Absolutely.
And fucking made this whole thing that we're seeing right now, essentially, that gave way to the Trump era and this crazy, nonsensical kind of world that we're living in right now. That's the crazy part 100%. About it. I mean, it's just so fucking frustrating. I think it's so frustrating as a Democrat, you know, or somebody who votes Democrat, because I don't ever want to call myself just a Democrat. I'm always open to what right. is out there. But it's like we have no choice, because now you think about the upcoming presidential election, even, you know, and setting the stage for that. It's like, what is that going to look like?
Yeah, exactly. So we are in very troubling times right now. And that's why I think it's important for the Democratic Party to take what happened yesterday mm-hmm. as like that red flag of like, you got to do something different. This is your, you know, come to Jesus moment. Yeah. And, you know, are you going to change course, or are you going to try to stay where you are and say, no, 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 if we just doubled, because that's what's going on in the media yeah. right now. They're like, no, 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 we should have been more moderate. Right. And that would have been the savior.
Yeah.
And that's what you get from the media, unfortunately. Right. Oh, well, if we just did more of the same, right. then we would do better.
Mm-hmm. No. And it's almost weird how they can just ignore like what the everyday people are saying. Like, it's right there for you. People aren't happy on social media. They're expressing their right. views. People of color are saying, what the fuck? Like, Black people are saying, right. what the fuck? We voted for you based upon what you said you were going to do for us, and it's not happening. And like you've said, again, when it comes to, college tuition, student loans, all that kind of stuff, like, where are you advocating for us on all of those things? It's not happening, you know? And one thing that's interesting, the last thing I want to talk about when it comes to this is kind of the platform that the Republican in Virginia, Glenn Youngkin, ran on, was this idea of it was like critical race theory, right? It was this huge yes. debate that's been happening about teaching this in school. And he ran on this kind of thing, like, they're trying to poison us. They're trying to make us think about everything with race. And for any that doesn't know, I want to just kind of read a broad definition of critical race theory, which is an approach to studying U.S. policies and institutions that is most often taught in law schools. Its foundations date back to the 1970s when law professors, including Harvard Law School's Derrick Bell, began exploring how race and racism have shaped American law and society, right? So it's basically just teaching us the real truth of America and how race and racism itself has been so ingrained in the fabric of our country that it's led to policies and basically the way that we live and why we see so much, you know, get such a gap in different areas of life, whether it be the wage gap, you know, when it comes to women of color and people of color, you know, when it comes to homeownership and small business grants, all these different things. It's essentially teaching why that's set up that way. But then you have one side who is trying to hide and continue to bury this history. And then they're winning based upon that platform of fighting back against the truth. And that to me is what's extremely scary. It's like all the progress we feel like we've made over the last year almost gets wiped away when you see things like this. That's what it feels like.
100%. And you're right. The progress that we make is unbelievably fragile mm-hmm. and it's not guaranteed to stay, right? And I think the critical race theory debate is a great one. And I'm gonna give you credit, but I'm also going to get you
okay.
because you're having a conversation about what critical race theory actually is
sure.
and the facts of it. That's not what Republicans want you to talk
right.
about. This is what's called the culture wars, right? They don't want to talk about critical race
right.
theory because they would lose that debate. They want to have a debate about being too woke
right.
or making white people feel guilty
right.
about being white. That's what they're really
sure.
want. Because and this is, again, a tried and true tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Look up the Willie Horton ad from the 1980s when George W. Bush was running for president. This ad is basically like, well, the Democrats are going to let criminals out to rape you and your women and your children. That's what they're trying to sell you.
Right.
That and obviously, if that's what you're going to take in, this debate about academic, you know, classes mm-hmm. and law school, they're not hearing
right.
that. They're hearing the Democrats want you to feel guilty for being white.
Right.
The Republicans are very good at branding these issues.
Mm-hmm.
And us on the other side, the progressives, we're terrible,
right.
terrible at branding. That's where we're losing a lot of the debate, because we're expecting people to have a conversation on this level
mm-hmm.
where we're talking about the actual facts and what's really happening.
Right.
That's not where the conversation is. It's down here
yeah.
where people are like, oh, well, I'm not going to feel guilty for being
sure.
white. I'm not a racist. I didn't own
right,
slaves.
Right.
And that's going to prevail in people's minds. This is something I used to tell people always when I was running for office.
Mm-hmm.
you can appeal to people's brains or you can appeal to people's hearts. If you appeal to their brains and somebody else appeals to their heart, you're going to lose because people are going to listen to their heart over their brain. So if we're trying to have a debate about what critical race theory actually is and what affects, because it's obviously a very important subject to understand how we got to the society that we're at, the history of redlining, of mass incarceration. Those are very important topics. That's not what they're talking about. They're talking about the Democrats are too woke. They want you to feel bad for being white. They're this cancel and a third, culture. Mr. Potato Head, cancel culture, all that stuff. That, and that has more power as a political issue than talking about the actual facts. And that's the real problem. And that's why a dude like Youngkin can win, because that's what prevails. When you make people vote on those two issues, they're going to vote their heart 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it reminds me of this like Family Guy episode when Lois is running for office and she just keeps saying 9/11 over and over. And it, and everybody ends up voting for her and like hanging on every word she says. And you're absolutely right, because they're just kind of debating the pop culture aspect of it and not actually talking about what it really means and what the debate is. And the last thing I'll say is, you know, I know a lot of people would be like, well, don't we get tired of talking about race in this country and all these different things? Like, I don't know if you saw some of these different stories that have been coming out, but like, let's talk Kyle Rittenhouse in Wisconsin, the judge saying that you could not call the people that he murdered
not victims.
Like, what?
They're rioters,
It's okay to call them rioters and looters, right? But not victims for being murdered. Or an Alabama judge that was that lost his job for saying George Floyd deserved what he got. Like, this is what's scary, because you have to then think a black man in this country going up in court for something is facing a
judge. It's going to face that judge.
And you can't tell me that that doesn't have some sort of impact in the way that that case potentially could go. Like, that's what's really scary. And I feel like that's what like our white counterparts miss, is that race is so far ingrained in certain things that in aspects and in certain places, and of course, not everybody, but there shouldn't be anybody in those types of positions that can tell you, you know, that can basically seal the fate of your freedom in this world. And they can use their own bias to kind of convict you of something. That's what fucking scares the hell out of me when it comes to all this.
Absolutely. And this is the thing, is that we tend to focus on individual cases, right? A single black man going behind this judge, right? But we got to think about it systematically. Over the course of our entire country, how many black men have to see judges like that judge, right? It's not one guy. It's the thousands we don't know about. In Jersey City, they just found out that at least 20 police officers are with the Oath Keepers, which is one of those groups that was out there in January 6th trying to bring down the government. These are police officers.
In an area.
These are people who pull.
In an area, by the way, doesn't know that is primarily black and brown. You know what I mean? Like, that's what's scary. That's fucking terrifying.
They get to live out their racism on us as a population. And if they kill you, you have to defend yourself. He doesn't have to defend why he killed you. You see what I'm saying? And so, a lot of our white counterparts is like, oh, it's not all about race. Maybe it's not all about race, but there are certain places you can't remove the racial aspect to it, because even if it doesn't manifest in one individual case, systematically, it's going to manifest over the course of thousands and thousands of people's lives in ways that we may never get to know about, because we don't get to be in that cop's head to know, why did you pull that person over? Why did you pull that trigger? So, I think that, you know, nobody's more tired of talking about race than people who are not white, right? Like, we're sick of talking about racism, too. But it's not incumbent upon us. We can't stop racism. It's about the people who perpetuate it to stop it.
And so if we don't talk about race, then the same racist shit that has been happening in this country will continue on, and there will never be a change or never be, you know, equality for all of us in this country, at least, you know, as close to it as we possibly could get.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. Ben, I think that those conversations are difficult. They're hard. People don't like it. There's a defensiveness that comes when you try to talk to specifically white people about racism. But the fact of the matter is that these uncomfortable conversations have to be had, because I've never heard of a problem that gets solved by ignoring it.
Yeah, no, and that's a great, great point. So, I mean, we've talked about the shits, babe. We've gotten into the shits, you know, that we've been seeing lately. Let's kind of move on to something good that we'll kind of end on over here as far as our conversation. And we'll honor some people from our community out there doing their thing. We'll do it in the Mi Gente segment of the show. But first, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Mi Gente.
for this week's Mi Gente segment, I want to talk about baseball and Major League Baseball as a whole. I mean, the World Series we saw on both sides as far as the Astros and the Braves go, Latino representation. I saw so many people on my social media feed just really excited, getting animated about this. I mean, you're seeing little kids excited about what they're seeing. I mean, even, you know, the Major League Baseball Players Association put on their website, and I quote, "The increase in Hispanic talent in Major League Baseball has improved the quality, style, and culture of our game," which is a beautiful thing to hear. And then, exactly. And then you see, I mean, the World Series MVP was Jorge Soler, who is actually the second Cuban-born player to be the World Series MVP. So, man, we have to salute, you know, a spot that's really, I think, inspiring a lot of people. Because at the end of the day, man, representation matters. You know what I mean? Like, what you... Hell what yeah. you see as a kid really does help inspire you to believe that you can do something, you know?
Absolutely. And I think with Jorge Soler is an even greater accomplishment because he's Cuban born, right?
Yeah.
And in America, we have one view of what Cubans are supposed to look
sure.
like. And I had a lot of friends who are older than me, and they were like, "I was born and raised in Hudson County. I knew so many Cubans my whole life." Mm-hmm. Then I went to visit Cuba and I seen all these black people right. and I was like, what's going on?
Right.
And so I think that it is beautiful to see a dark skinned Cuban mm-hmm. man out there representing for the people, because I think you're right. That those are psychological messages
yeah.
that a little kid is going to get of like, wow, you know, the Cuban people are not one color.
Right.
We're not one race.
Yeah.
We have a multiplicity mm-hmm. of skin tones, and we have a multiplicity of people. And I think that the beautiful thing about this Latino culture of ours is that we get the whole broad spectrum
sure.
of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Religion, mm-hmm. race, the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And I think to see somebody like him put up, and I'll even find a link to the politics of it, right?
Yeah.
Is that here's a black man who made a magnificent contribution to mm-hmm. getting his team
yeah.
over the hump
yeah.
and getting them into, you know, a title.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
That without him, without the labor that this black Latino man put into it,
right.
would they be in the same position?
Right.
And it's not just this one game. It's over the course of his career.
Absolutely.
And it's not just him. It's all the other black Cubans
absolutely.
Who never got the chance to play mm-hmm. on that sort of stage. For a team like the Atlanta Braves
yep.
in a sport like baseball that skews heavily white mm-hmm. sometimes,
yep.
even though it's held up by a lot of black and Latino players
yep.
and black and Latino fans
mm-hmm.
and is going global. Because I know a lot of people in other parts of the world, Japan, mm-hmm. Asia, are starting to come to baseball
right.
and opening these sorts of doors, I think gives people the message that, you know, this is a game that's inclusionary. You could come. It's about your talent. It is sort of like that American dream idealism that,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't care what you look like. I don't care what you speak. You don't even have to speak English.
Right.
You could play the game and we'll respect you for that. And that's what we're going to measure you upon.
No, absolutely. And I think it's to your point, it's beautiful to see that like the face of baseball that is outwardly being portrayed is not just being portrayed in one way. You know what I mean? It's not just a white baseball player. We're seeing, you know, Latino representation like we're talking about with Jorge and black representation with him, and then also Asian representation. You know what I mean? There's a lot of just great diverse players happening in this sport, and it's a beautiful thing to see them propelled as like the face and the kind of modern and future of the sport as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is culture wide, right?
Yeah.
And we're seeing this happen now. We see it in movies, we see it in TV, we see it in sports, and it's a positive sign.
Mm-hmm.
But we shouldn't, as much as I want to feel good about it, right? I'm that political person. I'm saying,
yeah.
listen, this is great. Let's get another one.
Yeah.
I want the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth Cuban
yeah.
winning the MVP, because that is when we really get to say, like, you don't have to, you know, I feel like sometimes when they celebrate
mm-hmm.
stuff like this, is they're trying to say, oh, well, we didn't see you in that position
right,
before.
Right.
Now we do,
yeah.
but we didn't see you in that position. I want to be in a world where we don't have to be seen in that position.
Right.
We are in that position.
Absolutely. Where it doesn't even have to become, oh, he's the second to do whatever. It's just like, hey,
right.
Jorge's the MVP. It doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, it just becomes so normalized of us being in those positions of being outward facing like that.
Absolutely. We should celebrate our exceptionalism and not
mm-hmm.
look at it as like an exception, but as a rule.
Yeah, no, and that's a beautiful way to put it. So, I mean, Hector, let's quickly get into all that you're working on and all that kind of stuff. I mean, obviously, we've touched on this, you know, you ran for Congress, you know, this last year. I mean, obviously, it didn't turn out the way that we all had hoped. But to your point, you've stayed in it. You know what I mean? Like, you've stayed in the mix and advocating and speaking out on behalf and supporting other people's campaigns. So, I mean, talk to me about kind of what you've been working on, you know, since the election and all that you're into right now.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, ever since my congressional run, I've sort of decided to turn back into the local politics. And that's really where I focused a lot of my energy, getting people elected on county committee, which is basically a like 2-block radius of like you represent just literally your neighborhood up to Jersey City Council, which just happened last night as well. And honestly, I have come to decide that or realize that at the end of the day, you could vote for president and that's important, but your mayor has more of an effect on your local life, on your daily life than any president will ever have. And so I think I've come to the realization or to the conclusion that I would like to affect politics more on the local level. And then that can trickle up to, you know, the state level and then maybe the national level, but we got to take care of at home. So I'm very involved in Jersey City because that is really one. It was one of my highest percentage municipalities. Sure. We did very, very well in Jersey City. As you know, it's a young, diverse community. And so that's the heart of where we should be targeting our voter outreach and bringing those people out to vote. That's really what I'm focusing on, getting more people involved, getting more people to want to run for office. At the end of the day, I'm glad for every single person that supported me, every single person that voted for me. But it was never about me. Is more about them. Yeah. So I want people to look in the mirror and see themselves doing the same sort of thing that I did and wanting to take charge of their local community. So I'm involved in Jersey City. I'm on the Union City Planning Board. So I get to make decisions as to what sort of housing gets built in Union City. Union City is still a very affordable immigrant working class community. Sure. And we really want to keep it that way. And so I've been able to do some work in that regard. But ultimately, I'm going to stay involved forever. I'm going to continue to stay involved because this is not, you know, we've talked about this already. Progress is not set in stone. It can go backwards and it can go forwards. If we're going to have an effect, I'd rather try to push the progress forward than sit at home and hope that things get better, because I've seen where that leads and I didn't like it. So that's what led me to get involved. And I hope that any person who looks at their community and says, you know, I don't really like what's going on, will feel that spark to do whatever they want to do. You know, you don't have to run for office. Whatever you want to do to get yourself involved in your community and have a real effective change on the sorts of policies that are going to affect you and your family.
I love that, bro. I mean, and especially when we talk about, and I talk about this all the time on the podcast, when we look at the census reports and we see the Latino population growing in these numbers and the way that it's growing, it's important. Like, now is our time. You know what I mean? Now is our time to advocate for ourselves and to get involved in what is happening and to have a say. I mean, so quickly, I mean, I feel like there's always this, it feels like this barrier to entry of politics and how to get involved in it. I mean, anybody that is like, I'm inspired, but I just have no idea where to start. Like, what would you recommend? Like, what are the kind of the first steps for people?
Shoot me a DM. That's your first step. No, but honestly, you know, what I really did is I just went out into the community and started finding the activists and asking them what they do, how I could help them. Sure. That's, you know, you see Solidarity and Mutual Aid Jersey City. Mutual Aid is a great, I would say, opening door for people to get involved, because that's literally helping somebody. Like, Mutual Aid is giving somebody a meal that they don't have, clothes that they don't have, and materially changing their lives right now. Not this political stuff of vote and 2 years later is going to materialize. Mutual Aid is right here, right now. So that's big. But honestly, anybody who wants advice or to get involved, you know, you can find me on social media. It's my last name, Osegueda2020, on Twitter, on Instagram, Facebook, whatever you use. And I'll help you get involved. We need more people. Anybody who's watching this show is the type of person who we need getting involved. So staying involved in Jersey City, staying involved in your local community and finding those issues that you care about and finding the people doing work on those issues and trying to help them out. I think that's the best way to get involved. I know it feels like, oh, what is politics? I don't even know. But at the end of the day, politics is what sort of society you want to live in. That's all it means. Yeah. It's like, what sort of world do you want to live in? If you have an opinion or if you have an idea as to what sort of world we need to live in that we're not doing, you need to get involved in politics because you're the person we need.
I love that, my bro. Well, listen, it's always amazing getting to catch up with you and just have these conversations. You know, And I appreciate you, you know, sharing your ideas with everybody on my platform, man. Hopefully we get to catch up in person soon, man. It's been too long.
No doubt, man. Yeah. Love to do that, and we'll catch you around.
Big shout out to Hector for hopping on, help me break down some of that information. I hope that it was, man, as informative for you as it was for me, and just you understand the importance of staying, you know, informed and understanding all that's happening right now. And speaking of y'all, of course, I want to hear your opinions. I want you to chime in as we always do. And we'll do that in our Ask a Gringo segment.
Ask a Gringo.
All right, so for today's Ask a Gringo segment, anybody that's new here at DJ Drombos on Instagram, I try to make y'all a part of each and every conversation that we have on the podcast. So you could check my stories throughout the week, and I'll be posting in there different questions that I'll be reading out here on the podcast. And today's question was, how do you feel about the current state of our country and our government as a whole? And of course, this brought up some touchy subjects, some touchy answers from people. So I'll try and get through a few here. Let me see. At Glamorista8 says, I'm so disappointed at how close this election is in New Jersey. Was Murphy really that bad? Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of us are shocked, obviously, how close it was. I mean, I started to get a feeling for it just kind of driving around the area and driving around the state, I should say. Seeing a lot of signs for Murphy's opponent, Jack Cattarelli. I mean, personally, as somebody who's lived in New Jersey for the years and definitely obviously the entirety of his term as governor, I haven't really had an issue with Governor Murphy. I think like Hector brought up, you know, he's had some progressive policies that, you know, I think we could stand behind, or personally I can stand behind, I should say. And also, to be honest, I appreciated the way that he handled COVID. I like that New Jersey was one of the stricter states when it came to the rules. I know that it was incredibly tough for a lot of people, especially if you worked in the nightlife or restaurant industry, and my heart definitely goes out to you. But at the same time, I appreciate that he took a stand for trying to keep us safe when it came to COVID and all these different things. So for me personally, I voted for Murphy this time around. I haven't had any issues. I mean, obviously, I would love for property taxes to go down in New Jersey as a homeowner. So, of course, there is room for improvement. But overall, I personally didn't think he was that bad. And it's definitely scary to think, you know, how close this race was. And especially, like I mentioned earlier, certain counties that were once blue flipping red and things like that. I think it's definitely, man, needs to be a wake up call for Democrats around the country that, you know, they really need to step up their game and campaign on shit that people actually care about. Actually go down and speak to the people. At Rebecca_DLM said, no one is going to agree with anyone. Both parties should compromise some of their ideas and come to middle ground. I'm a military spouse, which you could say the military community leans more to the right. And I'm in the middle. I'm first generation American, and it's been a pain in the ass getting my mom and siblings papers because the system is so broken. Even the own military doesn't care so much about their own soldiers and the soldiers' families. They only care about the money and looking strong, no matter how that affects the people actually doing the fighting. And that's a great, great point right there when you're talking about the military. And I definitely agree. I mean, I think there needs to be compromise, right? That's the idea. And actually, to my own frustration, Biden has been trying to compromise with Republicans, even though it's very obvious they have no interest in doing anything with him. But that's a topic for another conversation. Now, you talk about your military, and I love that you brought this up because I think it's ironic. You have so many people pro-American this, right? And especially on like the right, they're so pro-American, right? Don't you dare kneel for our flag, because it's such a disgrace to our military serving proudly over, you know, overseas and serving this country and protecting us. Well, if we're talking about disgraces, how about the lack of aid and support that's provided for military veterans? Like for example, Jon Stewart on his new show on Apple Plus was talking about military veterans and trying to find justice for them, for those who are feeling the effects of burn pits when they were serving overseas in Afghanistan. And basically, if anybody's not super familiar, there was toxic smoke that many of these soldiers serving in Afghanistan that they inhaled, basically a burn pit. You would throw any of your excess like waste gas, even as far as like tanks, guns, anything that was broken, they would just burn everything over there. And that would permeate throughout the air, and people were breathing that in. The soldiers were breathing that in, and many of whom, and it's like estimated like over 3 million were exposed to this toxic smoke, and it's led to all kinds of various medical issues for soldiers who came back from duty, and our government is dragging their feet on providing them benefits, many of whom are fighting for their lives and trying to pay medical bills, are thousands and thousands of dollars in debt trying to pay medical bills after serving this country, right? Like all these so-called patriots and talk about don't disrespect the flag, all this. Where's your outrage when our own government is disrespecting the military, our military veterans? And there's so many different things. Like you talk about unemployment is a huge thing for many veterans. Homelessness, physical handicaps, poor mental health. But nobody seems to be outcrying about that, right? They're more pissed off that somebody like Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee when there's actual real disrespect happening to our military, and it's happening at the hands of our own country. And we could probably have a conversation about this at another time, but that's like one of my biggest gripes when it comes to the right and these so-called patriots and these conservatives. It's like, you know, don't talk about America. America is the greatest country on earth. You know, salute to all our military and active service members, you know, our veterans and all that kind of stuff. But the reality is you're not getting outraged over the mistreatment that they've been having for decades upon decades. Where is your outrage there? Like if you truly were a patriot and wanted to support these people, go ahead and actually take some action and advocate on behalf of them instead of burning your fucking dad Nikes because they decided to do a deal with Colin Kaepernick. Like that's where you decide to show your outrage and express your opinion. Like that's what doesn't make sense. It's the hypocrisy for me that just I can't seem to wrap my brain around. But again, topic for another conversation. But I appreciate you for sharing that. Please thank your spouse for their service in this country. I mean, it's terrible to hear that you guys are not getting the hero's treatment that you should be getting. So, man, that's definitely something, obviously, another issue that is very much not being spoken about enough. Now, with that said, thank y'all so much for participating in our Ask a Gringo segment. I always appreciate hearing y'all's opinion and you guys, you know, kind of putting me on to different things at DJ Dramos on Instagram if you want to be a part of these conversations. And let's end things off, of course, by tying everything into a neat little bow with a segment we call Conclusion Stew.
Time for Conclusion Stew.
All right, so I know this is a bit of a longer episode, so I'm going to try to keep this short and sweet. I try to see the optimism in everything and really try to look at life through, you know, the lens of glass half full. It is a bit difficult in seeing what we're seeing. I mean, essentially, summing it all up, we're seeing Republicans double down on their crazy and having no shame in flat out lying and creating all kinds of bullshit, just as long as it keeps that money and then votes coming in. And on the other side, we're seeing the Democrats just continue to be spineless. Biden not coming through on the promises that were made to the people that were actually responsible for putting him in office. And it's going to be very scary to see the races for governor next year. And then, man, in 2024, the presidential election is going to be another scary moment as well, because it really just seems like the Democrats don't know what the fuck they're doing. And those of us who have supported them and look to them to be the advocates for change and fairness that we've been longing to see, they have just dropped the ball in every single way after being put in the best possible situation that you possibly could. You know, they have shown that they either don't have the balls to get things done, or in the case of people like Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema, have no shame whatsoever about letting you know that their loyalty lies to the people that are lining their pockets, i.e. big corporate America. So, man, I wish I had some more positive stuff. I mean, listen, you know what? With the World Series in baseball, that right there is a positive thing, right? So we can conclude on that. Like I was saying in my conversation with Hector, representation matters, you know. So that is a beautiful thing. With that said, I appreciate y'all for tuning in to today's show. And before I go, make sure you check out my YouTube channel. I feel like a lot of people don't realize I put out weekly videos on YouTube. It's just youtube.com/DramosOfficial. I do weekly vlogs, different kind of pieces of inspiration that I like to share on there. And just different videos that give you a little bit more insight into my life. So check that out if you haven't yet. I will catch y'all on Tuesday with a brand new episode. Stay safe, and I'll talk to y'all then. Peace. Life as a Gringo is a production of the Michael Dura Podcast Network and iHeartRadio.